This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. As again, a pre-recorded show because George, who's in studio, how are you doing, George?
All right, Nita.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Mart. How are you doing?
Hi, Ty. Nice.
Yeah, good. So, as I was saying, you off to Spain this week?
I am indeed going to the Bull Country.
You're not gonna catch a Grand Prix, isn't there a Grand Prix?
You know
there
what?
This weekend?
I can kick myself because when I booked this ticket, I didn't check
if there was a Grand Prix.
No, I knew there was a Grand Prix. I just didn't check where it was for some reason. I mean, I knew what the schedule looked like, but I just didn't put two and two together. It's like stupid. If I did, I'd have booked my plane ticket one day earlier. And you would have been there.
Yes, that would have been awesome.
Flipping hell.
Well, you can read it in the Spanish newspapers. Huh? How's your Spanish?
The thing is, my flight leaves. I have to leave for the airport when they cross the finish line.
Oh, okay. So you're going to miss the race as well.
No. You'll be watching. I'm joking.
Follow it live somewhere. Cool, guys. Well, let's get into it. And you know what? It's nice to kick the show off this week with a really, really feel-good story. And this is new car tech allows blind passengers to see the road. So from rolling hills to mountain ranges, views make the road trip obviously far more memorable. You guys know when you're driving in the countryside, it is nice to look out the window and have a see what's going on. And, you know, you take that all in and it makes the road trip, really, really interesting. This piece of technology that's been invented will make the road trip memorable for blind passengers, and it will allow them to experience what they're seeing counterparts see. So a prototype smart car window aims to change this by enabling blind or partially sighted people to visualize passing scenery through touch. Field of view takes pictures that are turned into high contrast monochrome images, and these are reproduced on the glass using special LEDs. There's a video, but basically what it does is it kind of the vehicle scans the horizon and it turns it into
braille,
pretty much. Yeah. Turns it
the
into
window
braille.
Itself vibrates.
It's and that is just. I mean,
that
how
is so clever?
How awesome is that? That you know, if you've never been able to see before, this will kind of give you, you know, insights. I don't know if that's the right word to use, and you know, it's I really think that's this awesome. So Field of View was conceived and developed by a team in Italy and GTB Roma in collaboration with Adeo, a local startup that specializes in devices for the visually impaired, and they seek to make people's lives better, and this was a fantastic opportunity for them to help blind passengers experience a great aspect of driving. The technology is advanced, but the concept is simple and could turn mundane journeys into truly, truly memorable ones. So I really think that's what a nice story.
And I also imagine the applications in other fields.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, let's say you could coat a tablet with this kind of film, and you start using this technology to translate pictures
to blind people.
Surely you'd be able. I mean, someone would. Surely you could translate this. So that, let's say the tablet scans the road and it allows a blind person to see where pavements are. You know, where stop streets are. Mm. Kind of create a. You know, almost using. I mean, what do bats use? It's
sonar.
To you know, create a visual of the
road.
Yeah, the area around them.
Yeah, this could be as big as braille.
That's
the end.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Could be as big as braille. I mean, I don't think it's there to allow blind people to drive.
No.
But definitely to experience what's around them.
Yeah, I think as passengers. Yeah. You know, but autonomous cars will sort that out in the future, then, won't it?
Yeah.
So I really think that's cool. Awesome. Fix the country, but not with our money. So we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, where we know that the Transport Department has highlighted updates and tariffs on all toll roads, and there was a poll that was run on Wheels 24, and a lot of readers have obviously filled out the poll and they've answered the question. So I just wanted to unpack that a bit because, I mean, we spoke about it, there's pros and cons to everything, but let's have a look at what the South African public are saying. So 4% of the voters said that the tolls help to improve the roads, which are, you know, mm-hmm. If you drive some of the roads, you know, in our country, you kind of question whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
49% said that it's a money-making scheme. 42% say they refuse to pay the e-tolls, and 6% say it's inevitable, so I just pay. What was really interesting, though, is some of the commentary that has come back. you know, from, you know, some of the users on the site saying there is sufficient evidence in the public domain to describe SANRAL as a corrupt organization. And a lot of people have gone on about this. You know, people saying that, you know, if we find taxi drivers and truck drivers and everybody's driving badly, they could make up more money instead of, you know, having e-tolls to fix the roads. Jen, so let's get George, what are your thoughts on that? Let's get George the consumer here, not George the CEO of Auto Trader.
You know what? I don't like the concept of these e-tolls personally.
Yep.
Because there are so many other taxes that, you know, efficiency should be addressed before introducing new taxes.
Yes.
You know, and in America, this Donald Trump had this drain the swamp idea.
Mm.
You know, in South Africa, we need to, I think, get more efficient and show the motoring or the motorist in South Africa that that we are using our money efficiently.
Yes.
Fix the potholes.
Yeah.
Do what needs to be done, and then if new taxes need to be imposed, then we impose new taxes.
Absolutely.
But I think efficiency is the first thing, and the communication of that efficiency. I mean, we don't even know what's going on in those areas.
No, we don't.
Apart from that, we already pay so much on tax on fuel and road levies. It's already in there.
Exactly.
So we're paying, you know.
We're paying for this already, and yet they still want more. No, I absolutely agree. I'm actually, 46% to say they refuse to pay e-tolls?
Yeah,
I'm one of those.
Yeah, I must say I am as well. I mean, I don't use the highways too often. We obviously live close to the office, but...
I use it every day.
You use it every day. I just, you know, and I think to both of your points, you know, if you can see what they're spending the money on and they're showing you that, listen, absolutely, you know, we've taken this much from you, but this is what we're going to spend on fixing the roads, and you can actually watch the roads being fixed.
But that's the point. You need to be able to see the roads being fixed. I mean, in my area, there's a pothole going up the road out of where I live, and it's a dual-laned double carriage main road.
Yes.
You know, not a high speed one. You still have to travel at 60 k's an hour.
Okay.
But on the hill, on the one traffic light, there's a pothole. You can't drive through this pothole.
Yeah.
You know, your car will bottom out.
So you have to go around.
You have to go around it.
Yeah.
Somebody's taken an estate agent sign and said too late, put a too late sign on the in the pothole. But it's, you know, to try and get people to avoid it.
Mm.
Because somebody with their Porsche
burst
a wheel the other day. And this thing has been this way for 2 months.
It's
two freaking months.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think we've all got potholes that we travel, you know, creatures of habit. You know, the way you come to work is the way you come to work, unless, you know, you decide to take an alternate route. But nine times out of 10, I bet you now every single motorist knows of a pothole that they drive around that they've seen for more than 2 to 3 months.
Well, look, potholes, it's one thing, but I mean, the whole road management structure in South Africa is reactive.
Yes.
I mean, they've now gone through this whole e-toll thing to build all these new intersections. And guess what? William Nicholls still stands from the freeway in spite of three lanes and the fancy six-way crossing.
Yeah.
Because it happened 15 years too late.
Yeah.
They're already behind. The thing has barely been finished and it's already behind.
Yeah, but William Nicholls is not the center of the planet. I don't find traffic out of my area too bad.
Yeah.
You know, probably because it's a newer area than what's around William Nicholls. But, you know, and in some instances, to be fair, you can't predict the population and the cars in an area. But so I think your point is valid, but the bigger problem is the state of the roads, the state of the traffic lights, the state of the infrastructure.
Yeah.
That is the problem.
Well, I mean, I just look at, I'm going to take a random area like Four Ways. When you head up Cedar Road, you know, they put up that whole new kind of, there's a whole new town that's kind of gone up there, but it's one road in, one road out. And I know that coming in and out of there is
a nightmare.
Is an absolute nightmare. Now, surely they should be thinking about stuff like that
before they build. But I think that's to Martin's point.
Yeah, let's put the infrastructure in before we put the buildings and let the people move in.
It's the same with my residential area in Pretoria. Same story. Multiple complexes, two cars each, and there's no access road or anything to suit.
Yeah, so I think this is obviously something that's going to continue. But I think, you know what, in general, I think South Africans are starting to really get fed up. And I think a lot of people are pushing back. You know, people are opening their mouths and they're saying something, which I think is really, really good.
Yeah, but what do you do? You can't flipping fly.
Well, wait until we talk about our next story, because flying to work will become, you know, something that we will be doing. Exactly. But just, I want to touch on another story here. First of its kind, Volvo's new light alert system keeps roads safer. So this is a story out of Sweden. Volvo cars and leading truck maker Volvo Trucks will share real-time data to expand coverage of the company's connected safety technology, a cloud-based system that allows vehicles to communicate with each other and alert drivers of nearby hazards. And this is the first instance of Volvo cars sharing safety-related data with another company, being Volvo Trucks.
Awesome.
So the collaboration with Volvo Trucks represents the first step towards achieving a critical mass of connected vehicles that could have significant impact of the overall traffic safety. From 2018, live and
anonymized bit is the important key.
Yeah. Yeah. So this anonymized data will be shared between selected Volvo trucks sold in Sweden and Norway with the company's own hazard alert system, and Volvo cars equipped with the Volvo cars hazard light alert system. So essentially, if you drive around a corner and you see a pothole, I think you activate your hazards, and obviously through the cloud-based system, these vehicles will then have a chat to each other, and a warning will come up on, you know, the other Volvo owners' vehicles to say hazard ahead. And I had an incident the other day where Waze told me that there was a pothole approaching. So they said, just, you know, be careful, there's a pothole. So someone's obviously flagged that. And I really, that for me is, you know.
Waze is a very good product, eh?
Waze is a very, very good product.
Well, apparently so is Volvo, because I really like their holistic approach to this whole thing.
Yes.
They are at the forefront of development on autonomous cars and now connected cars as well.
Yep. I mean, in 1959, Volvo opened the patent for the three-point seatbelt to all other car makers. And they're obviously going to do the same thing here, because I think their intention is to have safer roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Volvo is at the forefront of autonomous cars. I think they've got a way to go with Tesla. Tesla's got its issues. But Tesla is at the forefront of autonomous cars.
Let's talk about the real car manufacturers, not the battery manufacturers who dabble in cars.
We're going to have a long argument, Martin,
I think Martin's going to have to start sitting next to me in the show. But it's good. It's good. We must chat about this, because, you know, I think that's just, you know, somebody who's, you know.
A petrol head
versus a tech head.
Battery head.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's really, really nice. And hopefully, you know, and I think, you know, to the consumers out there driving in South Africa, if you do see a hazard, alert, you know, put it on two ways, alert the other motorists around you. So that's really, really cool. And then, George, we were talking about flying and flying to work. So Uber's drone inspired flying taxi of the future. This is a story out of Los Angeles. It's not a bird nor a plane, but Uber's new prototype vehicle shows off its vision of the future of transportation, a flying taxi that aims to alleviate urban congestion. A model of Uber's electric vehicle takeoff and landing vehicle, which is called the eVTOL, a cross between a helicopter and a drone, was displayed at the second annual Uber Elevate Summit in Los Angeles on Tuesday. And these guys are really, really pushing hard to kind of drastically improve global mobility.
You know, the technology is there, and the capability is there, and it's absolutely possible. There's one barrier. There's one problem.
Yeah, how do you traffic it? Well,
no, that's even easy. That's not hard to do, because these things have got so many sensors. The problem is the flight time. You can't get much flight time out of these things because of the batteries. The batteries are not yet.
Yeah, so this gentleman who's the product chief, Nikhil Gul, said that the all electric fly can achieve speeds of 300 kilometers an hour with a range of 100 k's.
I mean, that's
on
fine
a battery
for
charge.
Like a short trip. But
absolutely.
Then, you know, what if you do, you know, two trips, right? 100 k's, not far.
Yeah.
Two trips, and then you got to charge the thing. How long does it take to charge?
Yeah. Well.
So, you know, like aeroplanes, you know, big jets.
Yes.
It's not making money if it's standing.
Yeah.
So the same with these things. It won't be cheap to make. And if they're standing on the ground charging, they're not making money.
Yeah.
So that range has to go up significantly.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say a couple of hundred kilometers before this is actually viable. So the tech might be there, but the battery tech's not there.
Because that's the thing. I mean, yeah.
Or they could
put an engine in it.
Well, yeah, there we go. What if they had a little container with a fluid which can easily be replaced? And then they use this fluid to propel it.
Is that petrol, Martin?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Don't those exist already?
No, really.
The problem is they burn.
Yeah, so it becomes a pollution
thing. What they should
actually
consider in this case, until battery technology catches up, is maybe a removable or battery exchange program. So if
you don't
lands,
have to recharge, you can land and replace.
Replace the battery with the charged one. Get the flat one on charge, and there it carries on. And
you're getting so passionate, you're breaking the studio.
There you go.
I think that's viable. Tesla already does that. You can add a supercharging station in America. You just
swap out a battery.
You stop at a supercharger on your long road trip and you swap out a battery. Takes 12 minutes if I'm not mistaken.
Are they doing it or are they still investigating
it? No, they're doing it.
All right.
Sure.
What about Tesla?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it's, are we going to fly to work one day? And, is that a foreign concept? And I think the more we talk about it, the less, foreign it seems. But I think it is inevitable. I mean, it's going to happen in the States before it happens anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, how do they traffic that in the sky? Will these drones just fly autonomously and miss each other?
Collision avoidance. I mean, the little drones that you fly around nowadays have collision avoidance.
Okay.
And radar, LIDAR. How does an autonomous car drive?
Yeah.
So all that needs to happen is there needs to be management systems, software that acts like an air traffic controller.
Yes.
And doesn't – I mean, already, if you try and fly your drone, it's around certain airports – the drone has technology that won't fly there.
Okay, so it won't go into that restricted airspace.
It won't go into the airspace. So you can do what you like, that drone ain't going to fly.
Yeah.
So that kind of technology has to develop where there's software that manages the sky.
Yes.
Because I think with the large volumes of a flying taxi fleet, having humans do it is going to be disastrous.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. I just worry about the, tons of litter that's going to be thrown out of these flying taxi windows, like we see in the streets now.
I don't think so.
I don't know if you fly. Well, I suppose if you're flying at 300 k's an hour, you're not going to have your window open.
Yeah.
But I see there was a story out of China. Someone on a Chinese aeroplane opened the door because he wanted air. I heard that on the
jet.
Yeah, he was flying on a proper commercial flight, and he decided he wanted air, so he started opening the door.
Well, obviously he didn't get it right because he didn't hit mainstream news.
No, exactly. Yeah, so it was but I mean, can you just imagine some nuts are getting up and trying to open the door of an aeroplane?
At least these drones won't have to cope with pedestrians.
That's also true. So those fatalities will come down. Right, gents, let's get into our F1 segment. George, what is happening at the moment? I see, obviously, we've got the Spanish Grand Prix coming up this weekend. And Lewis Hamilton is back on top of the World Championship as Formula One returns to Europe. But the Mercedes driver faces a big battle to stay ahead of Ferrari Sebastian Vettel in Sunday's Spanish Grand Prix.
It is artificially on top of the World Championship at the moment. He's there because he was lucky.
Okay.
Absolutely lucky. I've got nothing against Hamilton. Yep. Obviously, Vettel's my guy, but he was lucky. He got that podium because of the mayhem that happened on the track on the day. And Vettel was, was unlucky in that. He made a stupid move. He tried to pass Bottas.
Mm-hmm.
Locked up, missed the next corner, and had a couple of cars pass him. So,
yeah.
So, but unfortunately, the difference between the points on the on the leadership position, or should I say, on pole position, and points on fourth or fifth is significant. So, therefore, Hamilton passed him on the Drivers' Championship. But the other drivers aren't far away. Raikkonen and Bottas are not far away in terms of points. So I think it's still Ferrari's year. But but who knows?
And I see that something that I've picked up here is that pole position is obviously really, really critical in the Spanish Grand Prix, because it says only three of the last 17 races at the Circuit de Catalunya, albeit also three of the last seven have been won from anywhere else on the grid.
Mm. Yeah, no, I suppose history is the best predictor of the future, but if you look in the rearview mirror all the time, you can have a head-on collision. So,
that is true.
So while I take that, the cars are different, the rules are different, the drivers are different, and Ferrari's stronger. We've got the best breaker in the business in Ricciardo. So, I don't know if pole position is any longer such a predictor.
Okay. All right. So, but it sounds like it's going to be a
It's going to be an interesting race.
It's going to be an interesting race. Well, that's fantastic. And then I see here Tatiana Calderon is not ruling out her chances of securing some Friday practice outings for Sauber. It was an interesting story because you don't see a lot of women in F1. I mean, I don't really follow motorsports, so I don't know how contested this really is, but...
The fact that she's testing is great. Can she withstand the G-forces? I'm sure that she can. But at the moment, there is a lot of people waiting for seats in a Formula One car.
Sure. I mean, she's currently a GP3 driver. And again, the guys are saying that she obviously can't handle the G-forces, but... she has a statement that says, I do many hours of training, for example, in the torture machine, which works my neck. And how's this? In a year, I've made it 9 centimeters wider.
Wow.
So obviously, you know, being in that machine and testing at Formula One speeds and doing all of that, she's improved the strength of her neck, and the girth of her neck is 9 centimeters.
Flipping hell.
Sure.
Holy cow.
I mean, that, you know, maybe this...
Maybe she's doing some exercises.
Well, you know what? I think if she wants to compete at that level, she's obviously, you know,
she's
strong-headed. And I don't think there's anything that says a woman can't drive a F1 car.
I think she's absolutely good on her. But gender aside...
Yes.
I think there's quite a long wait to get up to the the top of the field.
Yeah,
whether it's woman, man, you know, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of contracts coming to an end at the end of this year. Okay. Hamilton's one, Raikkonen's another, Ricciardo's another, and these drivers are going to begin moving around now.
Okay,
so you know, maybe she stands a chance to get into the back of the field. You know. One long shot is Ferrari needs to either choose Raikkonen,
yes,
or choose another driver because Raikkonen's contract is coming to an end. And they may choose, you know, somebody like Alonso. I don't think it'll be Alonso, but Alonso is one of the drivers that are up for grabs. Now, driving in Alonso's place is something that she may have a shot at.
Yeah.
But then she's got to stand in line.
But I see one serious problem here. I see she's already 25 years old, and that's kind of a late age to enter Formula One these days.
When did she enter racing, motor racing?
Ooh.
I don't know. I don't think the story unpacks that, but no. I mean, yeah. She's been driving for.
She's probably for a while. Been driving for many years, yeah. But to enter Formula One at 25, that's pretty late.
Is it old? I mean, how old's Hamilton now? 28?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Raikkonen's in his 30s. It's not. I think Martin's right. To enter motor racing at that age is too old. But it doesn't mean that, you know, look at Schumacher, how old he was and how far he went, and look at Alonso, how old he is. So once you're in, I think it's fine. But maybe you're right.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you guys have been following any of the MotoGP, but I see Marc Marquez won his home Spanish Grand Prix and took the overall MotoGP lead on Sunday after reigning champion main rivals collided spectacularly. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but Marquez was out in front, and Lorenzo Dovizioso and Pedrosa were, you know, fighting for second, third, and fourth respectively. And there was one hell of an accident where Lorenzo actually got flipped off his bike and landed quite heavily, which you know, makes for exciting television, but to fly off a motorbike at that speed, and he got some proper altitude, so you know, he was complaining of a sore hip, but you know, everybody was fine. But I see that the MotoGP is hotting up, and it's proving to be quite an exciting season for the motorbike riders, which is really good to see. And I see the next Grand Prix is on the 20th of May in France. So we'll keep you guys posted on that.
Going back to the ages.
Yes.
Kimi Raikkonen at the moment is the oldest Formula One driver on the track, 38 years old, followed by Alonso at 36, Hamilton at 33, Roman Grosjean at 32, and then Sebastian Vettel at 30, and Nico Hülkenberg at 30. The rest are all in their 20s. And the youngest Formula One driver is Lance Stroll at 19. And then the one with the most the hottest head and the dumbest moves, Max Verstappen at 20.
Okay, well, that's clearly why he's making the mistakes that he's making anyway. So that's the F1 and MotoGP recap. Let's get into some topical stuff. So, gents, 1 week, 6 days, 15 hours, 59 minutes, and 56 seconds until South African Bike Festival going down at Kyalami. The Auto Trader South African Bike Fest, the third installment of the market-leading annual showcase in the South African motorcycling calendar. And there's quite a lot happening around this. And this is the first time ever that Auto Trader were involved last year, but we're the title sponsor this year, and for good reason. The first time in the history of the event that we're actually hosting the inaugural motorcycle summit, and we're hosting this because we want to generate conversation within the industry. I think there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had, and as a brand, you know, we want to be involved. And you know, my personal take on it is that I think there's a massive opportunity for more people to be on two wheels on our roads in South Africa. George, you know,
I think exactly that. You know, it's an industry summit, so you know, it's not targeted at the public.
No,
it's targeted at the industry.
Absolutely.
And the whole objective is to try and understand what the industry looks like, how people shop for bikes, how people ride bikes,
yep,
what the concerns are, and then the ultimate objective is to try and get the motorbike up to the status of the motor vehicle, the
absolutely,
car,
so that
we see, like you say, more people on two wheels actually commuting,
yeah,
rather than it being a toy.
Yeah. So I mean, the conference is obviously aimed at you know, anybody who is a stakeholder within the industry. We're looking at government, we're looking at finance houses, we're looking at vehicle dealerships, guys that are selling bikes, guys that are manufacturing bikes, obviously the OEMs.
Yeah.
So anyone related to the motorbike industry, it's a free. The summit is free, and we really want to get those halls packed, because I think people need to come down, listen to the conversation, and it's not going to be a case of, you know, a whole bunch of people standing up on soapboxes and having a say. I think the way we've packaged it is really, really clever. There are going to be three or four panel discussions. We've got you know, key individuals within the industry who have put their hands up to say we're happy to come and sit and have a chat. And how do we as an industry collaborate to make two wheels more affordable or accessible, should I say, and really just, you know, solve some of the congestion problems that we have in South Africa. I don't see why more people shouldn't be riding motorbikes. It's a cheaper mode of transport. It's cheaper to run. And this is a solution that could really, really revolutionize how South Africans get from point A to point B.
Well, I mean, I've been on four wheels since the time I started driving,
yep,
and I'm actually considering making that move now.
Okay.
So Bike Fest will be hugely interesting from my side.
Absolutely.
As a potential first-time biker.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things you'll see at that summit, without me giving away the detail,
yeah,
one of the things you'll see is that, you know, riding a motorbike is not a binary thing versus a car. It's not an either or.
No.
You know, for some people that who have a singular mode of transport and could only afford one vehicle, then it is binary, and yep, it's an either or thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't have to be binary.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean because you're a motorcyclist, you're not a motorist.
Yes.
In a car.
Absolutely.
So we will juxtapose the motor vehicle environment,
yes,
against the motor car, the motorbike environment. And see what the differences are. See where we can bring the two closer together.
Yeah.
So that the motorcycle, or the motorcyclist, or the future motorcyclist, is seen in the same light, financed in the same light, shops in the same way, so that we can get the same sort of drive,
yeah,
for lack of a better term,
yeah,
behind motorbikes.
Well, you know, I mean, George, and you will know this, because obviously at the summit, we know that you're going to be speaking and unpacking how the motorbike shopper is actually shopping for a motorbike, how they're interacting with portals like Auto Trader, which is the biggest motorbike portal in the country.
Exactly.
What bikes they're looking for, how long how long they're spending,
yeah,
and really the consumer journey. And I think those insights are going to be imperative. And I think if you know, anybody who's interested, and particularly you know, the dealers that that use our sites must come down and have a listen, because there's some really, really good insights that we've started to see that have come out of the research, which you obviously going to unpack.
So there is definitely some interesting stuff, and it's going to surprise almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is not someone's opinion.
No,
this is actual fact, and we've gone out to go and get it. We've invested in trying to get insight into what this landscape looks like. So, you know, let's not give it away, but you're going to be very surprised. Yeah,
absolutely. And then just to touch on some of the other kind of topics that will be unpacked at the summit, obviously, you know, education around riding a bike, getting a license, et cetera, et cetera. And then obviously safety is going to form one of the pillars that we're going to debate and chat about. There's a lineup which I had the privilege of seeing yesterday. There really are some fantastic, you know, industry representatives that are going to be on hand. And you know what? You know, come down if you are interested, ask questions, and let's just start the conversation, because I think that's where it all starts. We need to plant seeds. We need to have the conversations. And I think as a united as a industry front, you know, we all want to sell more product at the end of the day. And I think this is really going to reignite. And my hope is that it reignites the motorbike industry in South Africa. And then from a consumer point of view, obviously Auto Trader, we're putting on a number of activations. Nice to know that if you do arrive on two wheels, you don't have to pay for parking. Auto Trader has taken care of that for you. And we're also offering anybody who arrives on two wheels the opportunity to sell their bike on the day. So you might be coming to Bike Fest just, you know, going to go and have a look around and do some test rides, but we're going to offer you the opportunity to sell your bike for $99. And your bike will be loaded onto our site for a month. And who knows, maybe you sell it, because that obviously allows you then to buy a new motorcycle. So
and allows someone else to become a motorcyclist.
Absolutely.
Like Martin.
Like
absolutely. So Mart, best you get down, because there will be a lot of bikes on sale.
Can I also see Martin, there's a learn-to-ride thing.
Martin will be standing there. We'll introduce you to him so you can try to sell your bike.
To him, exactly. Yes, and then we've obviously got the Auto Trader nearly new bike area, which, you know, is an extension of, you know, it allows our digital platform to have a tangible experience for our consumers. So there are a host of dealers who have who are taking part, and we're going to have a whole bunch of nearly new bikes for sale at Bikefest this year.
Martin's absolutely right. You can come and learn to ride.
Absolutely, and you don't have to be you don't have to be a biker. Just you know, come down. It really is. It's a fantastic weekend for families. There will be some motorbike racing, and there's going to be a whole host of activities. And when it comes to ticket sales, if you use the promo code hashtag AutoTrader, you will get a 30% discount on your ticket, which is the largest discount. So make sure you you know, you're buying your tickets online and using AutoTrader as your code to qualify for that discount.
Well, is the motorbike of the sky going to be there?
We don't want to let the cat out the bag, but
there'll be a motorbike of the sky.
The motorbike of the sky could be there. So so that's all coming together really, really nicely.
As well as the Monster Energy team.
Monster Energy team. There's a whole bunch. It's actually one of the top stunt drivers, bike stunt drivers coming out from France. I can't quite recall the gentleman's name right now. Oh, pro street bike freestyle champion Julian Welsh returns to Kyalami. So, you know, that's going to be really, really exciting. But I think just a fantastic weekend out. And I'm really encouraging the South African public to, you know, come and have a look at how you could actually revolutionize your life by putting yourself on two wheels. And a lot of people go on about, oh no, they're dangerous. Bikes are not dangerous. The person riding the bike is the problem. And you know, and I can speak, you know, from first-hand experience, having owned a scooter for 12 years. I absolutely love it. It's not big. It's 110 cc's, and you know what? I'm quite happy riding a bike with a small engine. And you know what? It gets me from A to B as quickly as I need to. So it really, really is cool. So that's Bikefest, and it really is going to be a fantastic weekend. So come down and join us. Cool. And then what I'm going to do now is we've got a pre-recorded little clip from Chad, who was at the Auto China 2018 Beijing International Automotive Exposition. And Chad was in Beijing, and I mean, just having a look at the article on site, it really looked like a fantastic motor show. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cross over to Chad, and Chad will just give us a little bit of insight.
Hi guys, and welcome to all of those listening. Yeah, I'm going to chat a little bit about my recent excursion over to China, where I was invited by Haval and Great Wall Motors, the holding company of Haval SUVs, to go and attend Auto China 2018. It is one of the largest motor shows on the annual calendar, and of course taking place in Beijing in mainland China. A week-long event, absolutely fantastic, fantastic experience, I must tell you that much. Really opened the eyes. Vehicles in China that you wouldn't ordinarily see anywhere else in the world. China has a very, very unique, very, very specific market, and their automotive industry and their market is actually that big that we have several key players in the motor industry that are actually creating vehicles that are China specific. So you will only see them in China. And this is the likes of BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Audi, VW, all creating China specific models. But the big news was, of course, all the EV vehicles and the new energy vehicles. They call them NEV. And this is now a bit of a ploy by the government to try and get more EVs out on the road, a greener type of transportation, and they're actually subsidizing the development of new energy vehicles, and then of course punishing those who do not meet a 10% of their sales being NEV or electric, something of the sort, something that is green to the environment. So a bit of a double-edged sword there, but a great motivation for the manufacturers to come up with something unique and something green and something that is kinder to the environment. Of course, China is well known for their air pollution and the likes, and the government is just stepping in and taking control of that. Now, Haval themselves introduced several new models. One of them is the facelifted H6 with more technology than ever, and we were quite impressed with them when we drove the H6C. And the new H6, I tell you what, is going to be an absolutely fantastic vehicle if it has the same level of build quality. The additions now and the newer design, the new gearbox and the new engine are going to make that vehicle that much better. They also introduced the F5. Now, this is geared a little more towards the younger audience. And this actually is a fantastic looking vehicle with the right engine, the right gearbox, and of course, just the right amount of tech. The styling is fantastic, but it's going to be a while before we see it here locally. We may not see it. Of course, China is a left-hand drive market, and for them to develop right-hand drive vehicles means that there needs to be enough of a demand from the UK and Australia before they'll consider South Africa. There were over 1,000 vehicles on display at the Auto China 2018 Motor Show, and of those, more than 200 were NEV or new electric vehicles. Now, Haval also played a little bit of a part in that, and they have a luxury brand, a luxury division, in the same way that your Lexus is to Toyota or Infiniti is to Nissan, and this is called Way. And now, we may be seeing Way as soon as 12 months away. They may even be in South Africa that soon. More than likely 2 years, but I tell you what, they've got some fantastic looking products that are definitely going to take the fight to the Germans. They introduced a full electric concept, and then of course the P8, which is a beautiful hybrid full-size SUV. We've got a bit of a write-up about that up on our site, so please do go and take a look at that and see what it's all about and take a look at the gorgeous pictures of those vehicles.
Well, thanks for that, Chad. Really, really sounded like you had a fantastic time. And I mean, just looking at some of the pictures that are on our site, it really looks like that Chinese vehicle market is something else. And a whole bunch of concept cars coming out of that. And like Chad alluded to, you know, brands like BMW and Mercedes-Benz manufacturing vehicles specifically for the Chinese market. I mean, that market is absolutely massive. I don't know if you guys got anything to add there.
I mean, the car I'm looking at is the Tesla because it actually exists, but you know, concept cars aren't my thing. I don't do concept cars because the very small percentage of them actually get produced and get onto the roads in mass produced fashion. But it looked like it was an awesome show.
I mean, what is the story behind that? I mean, these guys obviously spend quite a bit of money, you know, in R&D making concept cars.
They prototype and it informs the styling and the technology and all the stuff in the actual production car. So it's a brilliant process, but it doesn't interest me personally because it doesn't hit the market.
No, they also use it to gauge public reaction to future design trends and things.
And I'm sure they'll take nuances out of, you know, the tech and the research and development and put it into cars that are obviously mass produced.
But China is huge on electric vehicles, their domestic market. I also believe they're about 10 years away from phasing out fossil fueled cars.
Oh, really? Oh, no, Martin, what are you going to do? No?
You're not going to go and drive in China,
I'm
are you?
I'm not in China, my China.
Hey, China, what are you going to do?
Oh, I'm not in China, my China.
Yeah, so, I mean, Martin, so, yeah, carry on there.
Yeah, so as far as the Chinese market is concerned, all these electric vehicles are absolutely relevant to their market.
Yeah.
They're about to phase out fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So I think we're actually on the cusp of a revolution. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
George is very much in favor of Tesla. But
I'm very much in favor of an electric car. Yeah, so Tesla's my favorite.
That the Chinese market will become to the electric cars what the Japanese manufacturers were to the petrol cars, petrol and diesels.
Yeah.
I think the Chinese are actually going to take over. And unless the real manufacturers, you know, get
like Volvo and BMW,
get their act together and really start rolling out these things, they might just get eaten up by Tesla.
Yeah, and then you'll fall behind. Exactly. But I mean, you know, and having chatted to Chad, you know, since he's come back from his travels, he said that Teslas are
popular there,
very popular over there. So that's nice to know. So we'll keep an eye on it. But like I said, there is an article on site where Chad goes into a little bit more detail about his adventures, and so have a read, and that's on autotrader.co.za under our news and review section. And talking of news and reviews, Mart, you were privileged enough to hop into a new VW called the Arteon.
Arteon. Yes.
And the name Arteon, if I can, the emphasis is put on the first syllable, is derived from two... I can't even say this.
Oh, you were busy with the press release then.
Yeah. What is that?
Okay.
Yeah, give it to me.
The art bit. Yes. They want to emphasize the art bit, which is why they put which is why you pronounce it as Arteon.
Yes.
Right. Because of the fact that the car is basically a concept car.
Okay.
2015, I think.
Yeah.
Concept
can I go
car,
get coffee?
Which they put into production.
Okay.
And if you look at the concept and you look at the actual car, it's very, 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 very similar.
Okay, now listen.
Yeah.
So there you go, George. The concept car actually made it to production.
Yeah. It did. I'm surprised.
So the art is describing the Fospec's design and the Arteon, identifying it as a premium VW model. And
because
now you've
in the Chinese market, they have this thing called the Phaeton and the Phaeton.
Okay.
So they take the O-N bit.
Yes.
All right. And then they just kind of conjure up a new name. In effect, the Arteon is the replacement for the criminally underappreciated Volkswagen CC.
Yeah.
So it fits into that kind of personal luxury car segment.
It's like a Passat.
It doesn't look like a Passat at all.
It's a lot... It's
lower.
Far more squashed, yeah.
It doesn't look like a Tesla.
It's lower and wide. It's actually closer to a Tesla. But anyways, they're targeting the entry-level versions of the Audi A5.
Okay.
Sportback.
Yep.
And the BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe with a car. Now, it's built on the same platform as you'd see under a Passat or a Golf or a Polo.
Did you just say that?
Yes. It's an MQB platform. But this is the biggest execution of this theme yet. And I must say, it is actually a lovely, lovely car. Photos don't do it any justice.
Okay.
It has some very seductive swoops and bulges and haunches and things.
Yeah, a lot of lines.
I see George just kind of frowns when he looks at it.
I quite like the front, to be honest.
I don't know what that looks like.
It looks like an Audi A5, actually.
Yeah, from its profile, from the side. Yeah, I'm going
to
say from the
to
front.
To the point where many onlookers actually asked me, is this based on the Audi A5? But it isn't.
Okay.
It's not related at all.
Okay.
Now, we get three versions in South Africa, two of them with turbo diesels. So that's for people who want to be practical or sensible while looking pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that actually really grabbed my attention is the Range Topper. Okay, it's expensive, almost 700,000 rand.
Yeah.
You will get 100 rand change from your 700,000 before adding options.
So rather buy a Passat?
No, because a Passat doesn't come with a 206 kilowatt engine.
Ah.
And it doesn't come with all-wheel drive either. And it's actually really sporty to drive.
Okay.
Well, I mean, look at what they tried to do with the boot.
Yeah, it's like a fastback.
A four-door with a fastback. That's why it looks so funny.
Yeah.
It's a four-door fastback. The boot is huge, by the way. It's 563 liters.
How long is this car?
4.8 meters.
No, it's long, eh?
No, it's quite long. It's not quite a full-sized car.
And it comes in convertible.
No, that's just the concept, unfortunately. Okay. Although it does make it pretty convertible.
Yeah, it looks better in a convertible than it does with a roof. The roof with the fastback looks funny to me.
Right. Now, the problem is the diesel version. The Volkswagen calls it their performance diesel.
Yeah.
But it's only 130 kilowatts. And in isolation, it's fine. But once you've driven the 206 kilowatt one, it kind of falls flat.
Okay.
Imagine this as a larger, more spacious and sleeker Golf R.
Okay.
And you're just about there. Except it doesn't go Verpa.
Okay, it doesn't go Verpa.
Now, only problem here is at that price tag, between 600,000 and 700,000 rand, if you're going to pay that much for a car, you probably expect a prestige brand.
Yes.
And Volkswagen might think of themselves as a premium manufacturer,
but
they dominate the small car.
Yeah, they're the people's
the
car.
Basic,
I mean, they were positioned like that for ages.
So it's VW. I mean, it's Polo's fault.
Exactly. So as brilliant as this car is, and as much as it deserves to succeed, I still think, unfortunately, that South African buyers will ignore it.
So if you took a Mercedes Benz or a BMW badge and you plucked it on this,
it would sell by the hundreds.
Really,
You know what? It's you know, all jokes aside about the Passat and this car are similar. And the Passat didn't do that well.
I mean, the Passat doesn't even sell in double-digit numbers.
Exactly. But do you think it's to that point that if you're going to spend that money, you want a more premium kind of badge?
I think you're right. It's the badge.
It's the
badge. The badge is the problem. And maybe doing what Toyota did with Lexus with this would be better.
Yeah, and put it under
a different brand. Put it under a more luxury brand, because they are synonymous with the Polo, the Golf GTI, the little kind of pocket rocket. This is not a pocket rocket.
Might be a stupid question here, but wasn't Audi to VW
like Lexus is
Toyota?
In other words, I'd rather have seen this as, let's call it, an Audi A3 CC or some sort. Because if this car had an Audi badge, they would not be able to keep up with demand.
Yeah.
But now, perversely, I also think this car will end up, this Arteon, will end up being more exclusive than things like the Audi A5 Sportback, because nobody will buy it.
Yeah.
You know, the market is full of nonsense, actually.
No, absolutely.
Because we have here is a car with premium finish, a lot of technology, digital dashboard, and beautiful 9.5
Well, you can't blame. I think the only people that you can blame for that is the marketing department from the OEM. Because if I go back and I look at VW, I mean, I remember my dad driving an old Jetta. You know, I had a Polo when they first came out, and they've positioned themselves as the people's car. It's a car for the people.
Now, they're trying to use this car as the next step up from people with a Golf GTI.
Yeah.
Right. So where do you go instead of going to Audi?
Once your Golf GTI has landed Volkswagen you that hot catch, you move into this when you've got
that's their theory. All of you are talking cuck. Ford.
Yeah.
In 19.
Whatever.
Yeah. Late 1800s. Came out with the Model T. Mm-hmm. You could only get it in black.
Yeah.
He positioned that car in a particular segment of the market on purpose, sold like hotcake. Okay. Now, VW has positioned themselves in a particular segment of the market. They have screamed about themselves in that segment of the market for many, many decades.
Yeah.
You can't go and change that overnight.
No, absolutely.
So it is not the marketing department's kind of fault. It is whoever decided to put this badge on this car's fault, because this car is like Martin says, it's an Audi or it's a C-Class Merc or a 3 Series BMW or one of those cars.
Yeah.
VW is not positioned in my mind for this particular car.
Sure.
This is a premium car
at
a premium price.
Mm.
Well, it's less expensive than the Audi or BMW, but still.
Stick to the freaking knitting.
But without a premium badge, and I think that will be its downfall, unfortunately. I really want to see it succeed. I really want to see it succeed.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will.
Yeah.
The market forces are powerful.
Yeah.
And, absolutely.
And the consumer votes with their wallet.
Yeah, absolutely. They do vote with their wallet. So, okay. I mean, if you're going to spend 700,000 rand, you're going to buy a VW, you're going to buy an Audi or a Mercedes-Benz or, you know, something like that. I think, as a consumer myself, would I, if I had that kind of money, would I even consider going the VW route? Probably not.
Well, to be honest,
to the point that we're discussing
I would actually consider this car.
But you've driven it. I think that's the difference.
You're an expert, man.
Just look at that.
No, it is really nice. From the front, I think it really, really is a nice looking car.
That's a good photographer, that.
Oh, thanks. let's credit my new camera.
Yeah, so, Mart, is the FDI app on our site?
It's submitted. I don't know.
Submitted, okay. So it should be live today. That's absolutely perfect. 100%. Yeah, it should be live today. Yeah, so hop on to news and reviews again, and you can read all about it.
Nothing wrong with this car.
No, absolutely.
Wrong segment. Absolutely wrong segment.
Yeah. I miss that those mags look... pretty nifty as well.
Those mags look very much like those on the Scirocco.
Yes.
That's where I recognize
that's
them
exactly.
From.
I mean, maybe that's all that they've done is they've just extended the length of the Scirocco.
I don't think it's really the same design, but it's very, very similar.
Similar shapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to the Scirocco?
They discontinued it because nobody bought it.
Why?
Because it's a Volkswagen, an expensive Volkswagen.
Because it's the wrong category for VW badge.
Yeah.
Same problem.
Same problem.
Right?
Yeah. Mm. This, they call this RTN a Grand Tourer.
Yeah.
Right. They're really trying to move away from the normal family car sensibilities, but it's still a four-door coupe.
Yeah. Mm. But then how do they perform in the SUV segment? They perform pretty well. It's funny, hey?
Yeah.
How in that segment,
yeah, but
you know, you'll buy a premium
Tiguans,
VW.
But you don't see so many Tourex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you're going to pay a million rand for an SUV and you can get it with an Audi badge or a Porsche badge, why would you buy the Volkswagen badge? And it's a tragedy.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the proof is in the pudding and we'll watch the numbers.
They make awesome cars.
No, they do.
It is a tragedy, but that's the way the market works.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into our tech segment. And this smart road in Sweden charges electric cars as they drive. So Sweden has built the first smart road that will allow electric vehicles to charge as they drive. The e-road... Arlanda pilot scheme, which covers 2 kilometers of road outside Stockholm, is an attempt to solve one of the biggest challenges that the transport industry faces, and namely that is to move freight and people in the way that neither damage the climate through greenhouse gas emissions nor the quality of air through nitrogen oxide pollution. And this scheme is supposed to extend a range of electric vehicles beyond what was previously possible. So I don't know if any of you guys remember, I mean, you must have all played Scale Electrics when we were kids. And you used to put the car into the slot and away you go. Yeah. And they've literally now, you know, built a road, and this is how this road functions. And I think the thinking behind it and the strategy behind it for me makes sense. It would be awesome. Can you imagine? Then you'll never have to stop and plug your car in again. Well, when you're driving it, it's charging itself.
Imagine a battery-powered car where you don't need to carry 300 or 400 kilograms worth of batteries.
Yes.
You can get away with 50 just to get onto the grid.
Yes, get onto the grid, and
fantastic.
Then you, away you go.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think that this technology would be on every single road, so
no.
You would need some sort of charge in the car and battery stack in the car to go, for instance. Like, it'll probably be just on main highways around
cities. I mean, think about how your daily commute. So you get out of your house and you get onto the highway and you charge your car, and then you're off the grid again, and then you're at the office and you get back onto the highway and you charge again. So I mean, that would alleviate, but I can only imagine the cost that has gone into manufacturing something like this.
And also the durability.
And if there's copper, we know that it's going to get stolen out of the ground. Yeah, so, you know, we need to find another solution. I really think it is a really, really super concept.
But this makes me wonder, why don't they just bring back overhead antennas?
Oh, like the old trains?
Like old...
Pantograph.
Like old trains or like the trolley buses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pantograph on I mean, that... the trams.
Trams, like San Francisco.
Exactly.
And
like those.
Yeah. Or like the trains that we used to have in Germiston.
Didn't the trams use electricity in the ground?
Well, the Pretoria ones. The Pretoria ones used overhead connections.
I mean, the trains still use pantographs today.
Yes, they do. So do bumper cars.
Exactly.
Yes.
Imagine electrocution.
No. I'm just thinking
imagine
of that.
The public liability
would be
insurance
absolutely
there.
Crazy. I mean, do you think this is viable, or do you think they're just kind of, you know, they're testing
I
stuff?
I think it's an idea, and it's worth exploring, but I don't think it's really viable, just from a cost and durability perspective. What do you think, George?
You know, scale brings the cost down. So if governments can invest in this kind of thing, I mean, look at the laying of fiber and copper, the old days of the telephone cables, yeah. And if you look at some maps of the copper that's been laid around the world, even the redundant stuff from the old telephone days.
Yeah.
You know, that infrastructure probably costs more than this infrastructure because the copper was heavier, the lines were thicker.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends on the appetite of the government to invest in infrastructure.
Yeah. It'll
probably be, you know, quite a long time before it comes. Yeah.
But this will not be very long lasting. That's the problem. You Why? Have moving things.
Lots sliding. Of moving parts and cars and stuff like that. I mean, imagine doing a, like, you, if you swerve, let's just say, you know.
Well, not only that.
Because that cable's only so long. It's not going to get you from, you know, you can't be driving in the middle lane and you plug into that, the lane
but
on
also
the right.
Every
you know?
Time something rubs over a copper strip or a conductive strip, it takes away a little layer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
so it does wear out.
Look at the charging system they got, I think. Well, they're thinking about in, it's one of the eastern countries, which is wireless charging.
Now we're talking.
You know, wireless charging probably is the better solution.
Yeah.
You know, and so this kind of charging, I think Martin may be right. It's not in today's tech kind of forward thinking way.
Yeah.
Wireless charging is probably the way in which things might go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, nice to just see there that you know, another option of how we can extend you know, the life of electric vehicles and actually just, you know, help mobility. Okay. Last story of the morning here. This startup app lets you buy stock in a Ferrari. Well, any really, you know. So the collector car market has historically only been accessible to obviously the wealthy, and Rally Road is aiming to democratize classic car collecting by turning premium vehicles like a vintage Ferrari Testarossa valued at $165,000 or Porsche Speedster valued at $425,000 into stock. So essentially what you can do is you can invest, they obviously load these vehicles on the app, and you can actually buy a portion of the vehicle as an investment.
No, you never get to drive it.
Yeah, you never get to drive it, but you know, when they sell that vehicle, obviously, you know, these cars appreciate in value, and yeah, turning classic cars into, and Mart, maybe this is where you should start investing your money, because we know that the world's going to go electric, and maybe, you don't know, the only petrol powered car you'll ever own or drive again is one that you have shares in.
Yeah, look, that's actually the way things are going to go in the end. Once fossil fuels become outlawed and self-driving cars become the norm.
Yeah.
I think the car is going to go the way of the petrol-powered or the diesel-powered car is going to go the way of the horse. You know, people take their horses and they take them out of the stable, take them to a track.
Yes.
And there they run, and then they put them back in the trailer and put them back in the stable.
Or off-road.
Yeah.
Or off-road.
Like riding a horse on a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So unfortunately, that's the way the car world will inevitably go. So
yeah.
Give it another 50 or 60 years, and that's more or less what we're going to be looking at.
Yeah. Quicker than that.
In your dreams, not in mine.
No, I think there are going to be a lot of people like Martin still, you know, wanting to throw spanners at engines and stuff.
But yeah, so if you want to, if you really want that 1985 Testarossa, it's probably the way to go to get it.
Yeah, I think it's really, really nice, you know.
Only thing is, I would like to be able to drive the car at the same time as well.
No, sure, but I mean, what happens
not if every day.
No, but if you've got 100 investors and then you've got 99 other people that are going to want to drive your car as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, then it's everybody's car.
It is everybody's car.
So, you know, you can take it for a weekend or a week.
Yeah. But I think from a concept point of view, do you think it's, I mean, would you invest?
No.
No.
I think this
George,
is,
no.
I think this smells like a get-rich-quick money-making scheme from these guys.
Yeah, and then also, I mean, how did they decide? I mean, how do you decide who's when they sell the stock? Does the majority shareholder go, okay, cool, well, I want out?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a nice idea, and you know, it'll probably, you know, have some investors, but it's not gonna. I don't think it's gonna be the next big thing, to be honest.
Okay, cool. Well,
you know, I got an opportunity to be in a Porsche Speedster a little while ago.
Oh wow, well, there's a Porsche Speedster on here as well. There we go.
This was in Santa Monica, where the Porsche Speedster was made popular.
The Rally Road.
Yeah.
Wow. That and how was that?
Oh, what an awesome car.
Oh really?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't invest in it.
Huh?
You wouldn't invest in
it. Unless I could drive it.
Okay, so what you're saying. Thing. All right, yeah. So you want to,
if you, you pay for a car, you want to drive it.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, guys, that's the end of our show. We hope you've enjoyed. And like we said, get to SA Bike Fest. It really is going to be a fantastic weekend. If you're a dealer or consumer, or you're just involved in the motor, in the motorbike industry, come down, have a listen, come and talk to us, because it really is going to be fantastic. And on that note, that is the end of the show. And log on to our social pages, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Adia.
Cheers. Ciao.
This is CliffCentral.com.